This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Everybody. Boy, oh boy, another hurricane, Cat 5, Hurricane Maria. We got to start there. We've got Paul Manafort and the fact that he was wiretapped, talking about that, some of the new information there. Also, Trump Jr. asking Secret Service to scale back his protection. We'll jump to some Washington stories. But first, Hurricane Maria. Really, I have to tell you, as I am in Philadelphia, everybody is talking about this, just kind of gasping. When you walk down the streets, you're seeing, again, those big pictures of a massive hurricane barreling toward Puerto Rico. And those people, for goodness sake, are just barely cleaning up the potentially catastrophic hurricane, the strongest storm on record. Here we go again, to make landfall in the Dominicas, battering the Caribbean island, and is definitely on that direct course to hit Puerto Rico. So it'll be the first time in 85 years. And we know what this means because now we're getting used to talking about hurricanes. Sadly, it means winds that you just cannot withstand when we're talking about 180-mile-an-hour winds. So you got Puerto Rico on high alert. A lot of people sheltering, a lot of the evacuees who fled Irma were coming back to Puerto Rico. Now they have to brace for another storm. The governor, of course, ordered evacs ahead of these crazy, crazy conditions. And, you know, what can we say? We've never seen anything like this before. This is sadly the kind of storms that we keep talking about. If you remember Hurricane Hugo, and you can hear that in the background of the conversation, Hurricane Hugo, if you remember, killed five people in Puerto Rico in 1989, and the Hurricane Georgia's caused about, you know, $1.7 billion in damages to the island in 98. So they also have certainly seen their share of tragedy when it comes to Mother Nature and hurricanes. By the way, we also have some breaking news. Georgia Tech students were told to stay inside and lock their doors, sadly, during violent protests after police fatally shot a student over the weekend on the Atlanta campus. It's getting a little hairy there, and so they're still continuing to say that as this show rolls on. Now, on to Washington stories. And, boy, we've been talking about Paul Manafort and what the scoop is on these Russian connections. Sources now are saying, I've seen this on CNN and someplace else today, that the ex-Trump campaign head was monitored before and after the election. So they were wiretapping him. And, you know, this Russian investigation has been going on for a while now. And what they're saying is that he was under secret court orders, rather, before and after the election, and it's kind of an extraordinary step to take. So Special Counsel Robert Mueller's team, which we know the ex-FBI director is leading this investigation, there's been some controversy there into Russia's involvement in the election, although he was appointed by the president, President Trump. A secret order authorized by the court that handles the Foreign Intelligence Agency Act began after Manafort became the subject of that FBI investigation. That, of course, was 3 years ago. And, boy, it centers around work done on a group of Washington consulting firms for Ukraine's former ruling party. And I think that's where all this whole trail begins. So what does it mean? The origins of their interest in Paul Manafort go all the way back to 2014. They've spent a lot of years looking into what possible role his firm played and any other U.S. consultants, because, of course, that would be a no-go. But there are others that are under that microscope, too, as well. So now this renewed surveillance is of extreme interest. The Justice Department and the FBI both denying that Trump's wires, in fact, were tapped, because remember, Manafort has a residence in Trump Tower, so that now it's kind of unclear as to when and where those wires were tapped. Let's just say, remember I mentioned on this show that Russia is like a tangled spider web? Yeah, that spider is stuck in the web and it's not going anywhere fast. All right, kind of interesting. Trump Jr. asked the Secret Service to scale back his protection, and of course, with all the Trump children, there is a lot of conversation about their movements and where they're going, as would be with any first family. But Donald Trump Jr. says he wants to have that brought down, and you know, he previously had requested to travel without protection during a family trip to Nassau in the Bahamas in June that reluctantly, the Secret Service said okay. His family was aboard a yacht for several days without full detail. And of course, this is something the Secret Service would push back on because of the high profile nature, of course, of the family and the fact that you think of kidnapping possibilities, etc., that they would just, you know, he would have a target on his back. So it's kind of unclear as to whether full-time protection for Don Trump Jr. has ended or not, and whether or not it just was scaled back somewhat. And just to clear up the confusion, he is authorized but not required by law to have Secret Service protection as an immediate family member of the president. Of course, the decision comes as the Secret Service is already stretched pretty thin because of the size of Trump's family. And of course, the others in the family have expressed this need for wanting, and you, of course you can imagine, privacy and personal space. But again, I would be concerned that how much of a target would he be, and would he open his family up to the possibility of something nefarious happening? I think I'd be pretty concerned about that. That's for sure. All right, I mentioned the violent protests on the Georgia Tech campus after the student was killed by the police. You had protesters back in St. Louis on the streets after a night of violence. So this doesn't look like this is calming down anytime soon. And so much of this stems from, in the case of St. Louis, this has been going on for a while now, and of course this is police and people protesting over Jason Stockley, a white cop on trial for murder and the shooting death of a black man. And so there were protests back in the streets of downtown St. Louis after demonstrations the night before got pretty violent. They arrested about 120 people, and typical of what we have seen in some of these protests, you had broken windows and flipped cars, and boy, oh boy, sad to see this. When you see projectiles and you see the squaring off of police and then the protesters, and you just wonder with the tear gas how things can end up, and it's, like I said, very sad to see that. Coming up on America Tonight, we got a couple of great guests coming your way, including Paul London, who has been a guest on the show before. He deals with autism, and he's excellently talks about how to understand autism, rather, and what it's like, you know, when you're dating, when you're adulting, you're an adult and you're an autistic, things that people don't understand. And one of my favorite guests of all time, Lon Sefko, he's an inventor, incredible. If you go to the Smithsonian, you'll see some of his inventions in the Smithsonian. And then Dr. Joel Nitkin joins us, and of course, he's all about chewing tobacco. I have some friends that actually chew tobacco, too, and they used to be smokers. And smokeless tobacco, there's always that debate about, is smokeless tobacco better? And the answer is yes in many cases, but I'll let him dive into that. So sit back, enjoy, and we have more of America Tonight coming your way next.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free Reputation reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Interesting times of what we're talking about here in this country in this edition of For Your Health. Autism, in fact, there's a new character on Sesame Street that has autism, which I think is great because so many people are living with autism, dealing with autism, and the more we understand, the better. We have Paul Loudon with us. He's got a new book out called Behind the Locked Door, Understanding My Life as an Autistic. Author of this new book, Paul Loudon, understands personally what this is like as an autistic adult. So, Paul, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
All right, so let's go back to the beginning and realizing and understanding autism and wanting to share your story. First of all, what made you want to share your story?
It sort of happened by chance. It started as the person I was working with to help improve my symptoms and my situation. She had a radio show, and she invited me on as a guest with the intent to trick me into co-hosting it with her, which led to me learning and practicing talking about it. And it just sort of became a realization that I was more verbal than a lot of us on the spectrum and more able to explain things than a lot of us on the spectrum. And so it became clear that this was just something that I had an opportunity to do. I was in the right situation, and I really wanted to try to help people understand better some of the things we struggle with.
Yeah, so when you were a kid, when were you diagnosed with autism?
I was diagnosed at 23, so not a kid
wow.
at all.
Yeah, not a kid. Yeah. So that means your family, so growing up, did you realize something was different? Did they realize something was different? I mean, that had to be difficult.
So a variety of factors played into my late diagnosis. One, I'm 34 now, so it was a decent amount of time ago. I was born in 1983. By the time I was, you know, an adolescent, it was more of the ADD craze, and I did get diagnosed with that. Before that, though, we also moved around a lot. My dad worked in oil, so we were overseas and then back in the U.S., and then overseas again and back in the U.S. And so while I was struggling with social things and a variety of other things, there was always that element of, well, you know, he's just left all of his friends behind, and he's having to make new friends and meet new people and get used to living in a house with a wall around it or whatever. You know, there was always those elements. So it wasn't really until high school when we settled back in the States, and particularly when I left to try to go to college and things started falling apart, that we realized that something was seriously wrong and just how seriously wrong it was. And then fortunately enough, at about 21 or 22, I stumbled across an article about autism and particular Asperger's. And from reading that article, it gave me inspiration to go and consult with a neuropsychologist and seek diagnosis.
And what did the neuropsychologist tell you about the spectrum and Asperger's and all of that?
Honestly, not much. What I worked with her on was just the testing. So go in, parents go in and talk about her history. I take a variety of tests. Some of them are standard IQ tests, things like that. Other ones are ones focused more on autism. And then I got a diagnosis in the mail just telling me, you've got Asperger's. And from there, it was largely about research on my own, trying to learn more about it, read about other people's experiences with it, and try to spend a lot of time learning about myself and how I experience the world.
So in finding that diagnosis out, getting that in the mail, Asperger's, like you said, finding out more about yourself, what are the things that you have to battle as somebody who has Asperger's?
Well, first, I do prefer to just say I have autism now because the Asperger's diagnosis has been removed in the latest edition of the DSM, and I feel that's generally for the better in helping people recognize that it is one disorder and that those of us who may be higher functioning still often have significant challenges. I have severe challenges with self-management and motivation. I have a hard time upkeeping my living space, regularly paying bills. I regularly lost jobs just because I was a very extremely literal person, and so I actually read the employee handbook, and I would contradict my boss on things when he got things wrong, and that, you know, technically correct is not the good kind of correct, despite what Futurama may say. So there were a lot of issues all along the way, and so between that, some comorbid conditions, I have gut issues and things like that. I have sensory issues in particular relating to sound. So I've got a whole range of symptoms that provide me with struggles in day-to-day life.
You talk about communication. What parts of communication are challenging for people with autism?
One of the big things is that with autism, we're typically seen by people who don't have autism as missing a lot of things, that we don't pick up on, you know, facial expressions, body language, tone of voice. But we also tend to not use that as much ourselves, and we often feel that other people are missing carefully chosen words or very clear to us statements. And so it's sort of a two-way street where we communicate in a different way than the people around us do in many cases, but it's a situation where if we're in a room full of autistic people, support group or whatever, we often find that we feel pretty comfortable because the people around us communicate like we do. So a lot of times it's the implied communication, be it something like sarcasm or tone of voice or something like, you know, gee, that garbage can sure looks full, meaning would you mind taking out the garbage without actually saying it? And so there's a whole host of things that we tend to miss in communication, but we also feel like people misinterpret our communication in ways that we find surprising. For example, I might say, I don't like McDonald's hamburgers. Now, to a typical person, that means the same thing as I dislike McDonald's hamburgers, but I might just mean it as saying, you know, I'll eat them, but they aren't on my list of things I actively seek out. You know, it's not a dislike, it's just also not a like. So I might be extremely technical in how I say things that people don't get, and that can often lead to someone being insulted or interpreting a statement as more negative than it is. And so there's a lot of conflicts of communication that benefit from both sides understanding that the other side communicates differently.
Oh, so agree with that. Powerful what you just said. What kind of advice would you offer up to parents to understand a little bit better a child who is autistic? Because, I mean, we know that that's a big struggle.
One of the biggest pieces of advice I give is that if they're communicating at all, be it verbal, be it nonverbal, such as actions or even just random sounds, place as much trust as you can in them, even if it doesn't make any sense to you. If they say, you know, that hurts, don't say, oh, come on, it's just a little, because sensory issues mean that it could feel a lot more severe to them in terms of hurting or being bright or being loud than it does to you. And so a lot of times you run into this situation where as you experience things, people keep telling you, oh, it's not a big deal, or I believe you can do it, and then you fail at it. You start to lose faith in your own decision-making process. It can be hard to trust yourself when no one around you trusts you. So wherever you can, trust their experiences and try to solve problems in ways that validate their expression of what they experienced with that problem.
Yeah, again, great advice. So you know this, the FDA is trying to find some insight from people with autism, so you would be one of those people. And given that, what would you tell them about treatments? And you've been talking about it, what you've done yourself, but what kind of treatments would you say the FDA should look at?
You know, one of the things that has helped me personally the most, I struggled a lot with depression, and when I finally found the right medication for my depression, it also helped with my anxiety somewhat. And I discovered that a lot of times I was spending 10, 20, 30% of my energy on managing anxiety, which meant that I only had 70% on dealing with additional stuff from autism, and then additional stuff from autism would increase my anxiety, making it even harder. And so as I got my anxiety under control, my ability to deal with some of my autism struggles, things that would normally bother me dramatically, like if someone at a nearby table had their children watching videos without headphones, it used to make me so tense and so stressed that I'd be doing everything to get out of the restaurant as soon as I can. I'd be like, okay, I want to pay my bill, I want to leave, I need to get someplace more my control. And now it's just sort of like, eh, it happens. So I found that a lot of times what helps, and I've heard this from other people, is treating not the autism, but the other conditions that often go along with it. You know, if they have gut issues, finding out if a dietary solution can help with that. Pay attention to nutrition issues. Pay attention to any other comorbid symptoms. Seizures are common in individuals with autism, subclinical seizures. So you don't even see them happening, but they can cause someone to appear to, you know, lose the idea mid-sentence and stare off into the distance or whatever, where it's the brain has a seizure internally that doesn't show up as the stereotypical physical expression of a seizure that a lot of people think of. So there's a lot of comorbid conditions with autism, and I think that, you know, while we don't really have a good idea for medications to treat autism itself, there's a lot that goes along with it that we can treat that can really help people struggling with autism be more comfortable and then better able to interact with their therapists, their therapy, their family, their educators, anyone around them in more positive and constructive ways.
All right, great place to end this. Great stuff. Paul Loudon, the book is Behind the Locked Door, Understanding My Life as an Autistic. Pick it up. I'm assuming, Paul, people can get it on Amazon, right?
Absolutely. People can get it on Amazon or loudononautism.com to find out more about me and see some of my videos and blog posts.
Great. Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Investing is a long-term process. How many times can you think of in the last decade that the stock market has destroyed retirement funds for people just like you and me? For your existing IRA, you need the security that gold has provided for centuries. Remember, gold has never been worth zero. Capital Gold would like to introduce you to the Home Storage Gold IRA. It's a self-directed IRA set up with all the protection and tax benefits of an LLC. But the big difference in this IRA is you invest in gold and you hold it in your possession. You can't do that with stocks. That's security. You can transfer any type of IRA hassle-free in days. Please call right now and learn more, and we'll waive the $500 setup fee and give you a free safe to store your gold. 800-535-7789. 800-535-7789. 800-535-7789. That's 800-535-7789.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-765-9681 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-765-9681. Again, that's 800-765-9681.
It's been said, any society is only three missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Hi everyone, I'm Pharmacist Ben, nutritional pharmacist and host of The Bright Side. The good news about nutrition and health. The good news that if you or someone you care about is on a prescription drug or has some kind of health challenge, there's a gentle, natural, healthy way to address most health issues without drugs and without doctors, and it's as simple as understanding how the parts of the body work and how they interact with the foods we eat and the nutrients we take in. If you've heard me on The Bright Side or at one of my presentations, you know I'm a man on a mission. A mission to help you understand health and wellness and the remarkable healing powers of the biological system called the human body. And if you like The Bright Side, you're going to love my new website, brightsideben.com. You'll find articles and links. You'll be able to access archives, and we'll even have exclusive information that you won't hear on the radio show. And of course, you can purchase the Longevity nutritional supplements and even sign up to join my Longevity team and make an impact, make a difference, and maybe make some money too. Check out brightsideben.com. That's brightsideben.com, or call 866-735-2470 for more information.
To have a chance to talk to Lon Sefko, a just amazing innovator, inventor, best-selling author. Think about this, 2017 Pulitzer Prize nominee, author of multiple, I said that, you know, the author thing, innovative best-selling books. I've read them, the social media Bible. I can't get enough of his stuff, and I'm thrilled he agreed to spend some time with us. And I thought we'd talk about big brain, because he certainly has one. Lon, thanks for jumping on. We appreciate it.
Oh, how exciting it is to be here. Thank you for thinking of me.
I think the place to start, because there's a lot of roads that we could go down, but I want to talk about the fact that you developed the world's first voice recognition, voice synthesizing, pioneering home automation. I mean, this is brain, big brain stuff. So tell me about that, and how did you know you had really hit on to something spectacular as a person who is, you know, innovative and is an inventor?
Well, I knew I was onto something when it saved somebody's life. So I'm credited with the first computer to save a human life. Steve Jobs coined that phrase, and I thought it was pretty cool, so it kind of stuck with me. I did it really for fun back in the 70s, way back in the 70s when computers first came out. They'd only been out for a couple of years, and I was playing with it. I said, wouldn't it be cool if I could teach a computer to listen to me? And I did. And then I said, wow, how cool would it be if I can get it to talk to me? And then I did. And then I said, can I get it to turn on lights and appliances? So then I said, lamp on. Lamp would come on. Locked door. Television on. Radio off. Call mom. And that was back in the early 80s. And I worked with disabled people, and it started saving their lives, and I built a company around it.
Well, and that company took off like a shot. And, you know, when people think of voice recognition, who do we think of? There's a lot of people. You mentioned Steve Jobs, obviously. And, you know, you look at the archetypes for the Apple Newton and the first PDA. And, you know, as you said, you know, ultimately saving a life. But I think of Stephen Hawking, right?
Well, I actually went over to meet Stephen Hawking to help him with his disability over in Cambridge, and we didn't connect. He was called out of Cambridge at the very last minute. But my last customer that I got to work with was Christopher Reeve, Superman.
And we saw him in interviews. He wanted so desperately to be able to still reach people, and you obviously gave him the ability to do that. What was that like, the light bulb moment? You could see it in his eyes, right, when he was able to do that?
You know, that's the exciting thing, is to see people who have completely lost hope and wanted to die. A lot of disabled people that I worked with would have committed suicide if they could have moved their arms. But then after working with a system where they can, I had a woman without arms typing 48 words a minute. And when you see that, it's just so rewarding.
So when you do something, you know you're helping humans. You're making that connection through the computer. And what you were able to do, how that innovation that you created, where do you go from there? Because you have lots of inventions. In fact, 18 of your inventions are part of the permanent collection of the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. They even have 30,000 of your personal papers. So they were enthralled enough, and we've seen them. I can't tell you how many times I've been to the Smithsonian, and as you know, they're all housed in different buildings and
yes,
broken down. But what is it? You just are motivated. You keep going. For all the people that are listening that want to kind of grab on to innovation, how do you do that?
Well, Thomas Edison once said that inspiration is 10% and perspiration is 90%. And I get inspired all of the time. I look around and see things and know how to make them better. I mean, I just get these ideas of how to put things together. And some ideas are, to be honest with you, pretty stupid. But some of them I think have merit. So I'll go out and I'll build it or make it or design it or write it. And then I'll test it and see what people think. And if they like it, I build a company around it, and next thing you know, it's kind of out there and it's successful.
Yeah. Where do you think we are with technology? Are we at the cutting edge of technology? Is it going to take off even more? Where are we?
Yeah, I have to say it's always going to take off. I thought in 1978 when the Apple first came out and the Commodore was out there and the Osborne for your older audience, I thought we were on the cutting edge of technology. It was amazing what we were doing with computers. And that was 40 years ago, and look at what we're doing now. The most powerful computer, 1978, probably represents about 3 or 4% of the smartphone that we have in our pocket. So it's going to continue, and it's going to continue at a faster and faster rate, and that's going to make it difficult for us to kind of keep up with. Artificial intelligence is going to become a major part of our life, and I'm proud to say that I was one of the pioneers in voice recognition and voice synthesizing. Of course, we have Siri and Alexa and all the other, the girl in our box in the car that gives us directions. So that technology is here, and it's just going to get more and more sophisticated.
So, in other words, you better jump on, right? Especially we've got a lot of speakers and trainers listening to us, and I don't think you can afford, and you could address this better than me, to say, I just don't do that. I don't do that. I have just handouts, and I can't work with technology.
And I hear that all the time. I mean, it was really funny. My wife just absolutely refused to get a smartphone, and she only got her first iPhone when they stopped manufacturing flip phones. So it's inevitable. It's here, and people fought computers. They fought email. They fought the Internet. They fought social media. And if you're going to be in business, if you're going to communicate with other human beings, you have to embrace this technology. It's here, and it's here to stay. So learn it. It's not that bad. People are just afraid because it's something new. But once you turn the light on, all the monsters disappear out of the closet. It's actually easy, and it's fun.
I like that it's easy and it's fun. One of the things that you also do besides make these incredible inventions and set the world on fire with innovation, in your spare time when you're speaking, you know, you're a renowned international speaker. There's no question about that. You teach some of the world's biggest companies, household names that we know, how to harness innovative thinking. What are some of the key elements of what you have discovered really work for you when you're trying to make that breakthrough moment for these companies?
I love teaching innovative thinking. It's what I used to teach before I wrote the social media Bible. So it's kind of my foundation. I was asked by a speakers bureau in 2001. They said, "You're the most innovative person I've ever met. Can you make a keynote or even a whole day training?" And I answered, "Well, yeah, of course. I do innovation all the time." 3 years later, I still hadn't figured it out. They needed a process. And they actually turned it into a process. It's something I call the three C's. The secret to innovation is to study everything around you if you're trying to solve a problem. Look at it from every different angle, every industry. Don't just look at your own industry. If there was a solution, someone would have already figured it out. Henry Ford discovered how to create an assembly line. It changed manufacturing forever. And it gave us the opportunity to make less expensive products, like the car. But he learned it one afternoon, sitting under a tree on a potato farm. He was watching the potatoes go up the conveyor belt and drop into the truck. And he said, "Wait a minute, if I can change out the potatoes for cars, I got something here." And he reduced the price of the car to about $500, and he was making millions of them. So sometimes the solutions are right in front of you. And then give your brain an opportunity to communicate those solutions. Turn off the background noise. You don't have to get in the car and blast your iPhone. Just listen to your own brain, because it's amazing how many good ideas you have in there. You hear them in the shower. You hear them when you are exercising, when you're walking or jogging. You get them at night when you're sleeping. So just listen to yourself.
We started talking about technology, but ironically, turn off the technology to let your brain just kind of marinate with those ideas. I love that, Lon.
It's true. It's so true.
So as you said, you also have one of the books I mentioned, the Social Media Bible, and I think there's a lot of confusion over social media. I mean, I'll admit this. People will say, you have to do everything. You've got to get a zillion people on Instagram, and then, oh my gosh, what are your numbers on Twitter? For goodness sake, look at the President Trump and how many numbers he has on Twitter. And what about Facebook? And I think we've become overwhelmed by social media. How do we tame that lion?
That's a big problem for everybody. I mean, not only personally, how do you keep in touch with everybody on every platform? Even for you, getting to your listeners and finding where they are. Every company worldwide, which is why I teach digital communications worldwide, because everyone is faced with the same problem. First of all, there's too much content. There's too much information coming at us from every single angle. So we're getting desensitized to marketing, to advertising, to tweets, to posts. Everybody's talking. Nobody's listening. That's the first problem. But what you said was absolutely true. We do kind of have a responsibility, especially if we're in business, to monitor and to communicate on every single platform. The reason is we don't know where the critical mass is. We don't know if your listeners prefer Facebook over Twitter, or they like LinkedIn or Instagram. So you got to kind of be there. You got to test it. You got to see where they are. And then after you test it and get some numbers, you can kind of cut back on some of the platforms that aren't giving you the best rate of return on investment and focus on the ones where the majority of your customers are.
Yeah, great advice. Parting shot. So as we talk about technology, letting your brain have a chance to think creatively, to come up with whatever the next great best speech is or product or whatever it is that you might be doing, what would you like to see happen in the near future when it comes to innovation?
Oh, I want everybody to become more innovative. I want everybody to believe that they are innovators. Everybody comes up with great ideas. Think of the number of great ideas that you've come up with in your lifetime. And if you could just figure out what that process is, like riding a bike, playing a piano, and you just practiced it just a little bit, and you were able to come up with really award-winning ideas once a month, once a week, maybe even once a day. How would that change your life? How would that change the world? America, I mean, that's what made this the greatest country in the world for centuries, because we are innovators. We are constantly pushing the boundaries, breaking through that envelope. And I want everybody to continue to do that. Just be as innovative as possible, because we all have it in us. We just have to know how to do it, and we get to practice.
Lon Sefko, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Kiyosaki, Rogers, and Schiff all concur there's an economic calamity that'll be facing this country. My question to you is, do you know when and are you prepared? Most people don't, but my friends over at Republic Monetary Exchange have been leading experts in precious metals to help you offset the coming economic collapse. Right now, for a limited time, they have a free book called The 10 Reasons You Should Own Gold. You simply need to give them a call at 888-772-2929 to get that in your hands. Do not allow the insiders to do what they did to you in 2008, putting your IRAs, 401ks, and savings in jeopardy. You need this book, and you need it now. The 10 Reasons You Should Own Gold. Call 888-772-2929. That's 888-772-2929. There's a reason that the largest investment banking company in the world, J.P. Morgan, just purchased another 50 million ounces of silver. This free book will explain it. 888-772-2929.
Are you one of the 70% of Americans that want to own your own business, afraid to leave the security of your current job to pursue your dreams? I'm Pharmacist Keith. Dr. Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, and myself want to show you a low-cost way to create your own business, working around your current job schedule, creating an extra income for you and your family by joining his crusade, spreading his message of better health. To learn more, visit radio.recordedvideo.com, radio.recordedvideo.com. That's radio.recordedvideo.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original and most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
Welcome back to America Tonight. Dr. Joel Nitzkin joins us right now to talk about something that sadly, someone I know died because of their use of chewing tobacco. So how about smokeless tobacco and the fact that it could be healthier? And I know a lot of people have switched to that. Is it healthier or is it not healthier? There's a lot of questions surrounding it. So Dr. Joel is the perfect guy to have on. He's a physician in New Orleans, and we're thrilled to have him. Hey, Dr. Joel.
Hi. No, that's a good question. A lot of people don't understand it. First of all, with smokeless tobacco or chewing tobacco, a lot of the deaths that are attributed to smokeless or chewing tobacco, especially mouth cancer, really aren't due to the smokeless or chewing tobacco. Chewing tobacco, smokeless tobacco, and e-cigarettes all present less than 5% of the risk posed by cigarettes. They are far less risky.
Yeah, so what is smokeless tobacco?
Well, the term smokeless tobacco includes a number of products, the most prominent of which are chewing tobacco and what they call snus. Snus is a kind of moist snuff. It comes from Sweden. And here in the United States, it's usually sold in little packages with miniature tea bags that you place between the gum and the cheek.
Really? Oh, wow. And it's like talking about that healthier versus regular. So I've said this before, how many smokers even, I didn't address that, but how many smokers try to quit every year and fail, and is this a great alternative for them?
Yes, it's an excellent alternative. Now, no tobacco or no nicotine delivery product can be considered totally risk-free. The best bet is always never to start, or if you start, to quit entirely. But if you're on cigarettes, which is the most hazardous and the most addictive of tobacco-related products, switching to e-cigarettes or snus or even chewing tobacco will, number one, substantially reduce your risk, and number two, they're less addictive, so they'll be easier to quit. So you could use it as a transition to quitting entirely.
Ah, that makes sense. And you've been involved in tobacco control since the late 70s. Boy, so I bet you've seen a lot of different strategies that have failed and have worked. Do you feel like this strategy is a good one?
Well, I think this strategy really makes a lot of sense. Cigarettes are very hard to quit. And the success rate with the pharmaceutical gums and patches and lozenges has really been pretty dismal. You know, about 3% of smokers manage to quit on their own each year. And with one of these pharmaceutical products, depending on which one you use, that will increase the rate to 6 to maybe 9%, which means that even using them under the best of circumstances, 90% of smokers will simply fail and go back to cigarettes. Now, with e-cigarettes, particularly the ones that you can have custom made to your specifications at a vape shop, have a much higher success rate, and it's a whole different process. What you do is you use them as a substitute for cigarettes, and then you can step down at your own pace. A common process with e-cigarettes is to go in and get a high nicotine e-cigarette with a tobacco flavor and use it for a few weeks or a month or two, then go to a lower nicotine level with a non-tobacco flavor, and for many people, over the course of a year or so, they can wean themselves down to a zero nicotine e-cigarette and then quit. And snus is another very effective option. Snus has been available, you know, in Sweden for literally 100 years.
Wow, really? For 100 years? So they've had success.
Yeah, well, they've had success. And because snus use is so common, Sweden has got the lowest lung cancer rate in men anywhere in the developed world.
Wow.
It's less than half the rate of rest of Europe. It's well under the rate in the United States. And the same seems to be true of other tobacco-related diseases.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, these products are not totally risk-free.
Yeah.
But you can cut your risk by 95% or more by switching to one of these products.
Wow.
This idea that chewing tobacco and smokeless tobacco cause a lot of mouth cancer is really a myth. The data that Centers for Disease Control uses to, you know, promote that idea is from a related product that's common in India and elsewhere in the Far East and Africa that's sometimes called gutkha, sometimes called pan masala with tobacco. And it has a horrendous mouth cancer risk. But the smokeless tobacco products and the chewing tobacco that's been in a widespread availability in the United States since the 1980s really carries a very low risk. FDA recently released a report, this is just within the last couple of weeks, in which they tried tried to project the death rate from chewing tobacco in the United States, and their projection was 110 cases of mouth cancer.
Wow.
Per year.
Yeah.
And no other cause of death. Now, that 110 cases compares to almost 500,000 deaths from cigarettes.
Mm.
So it's a huge reduction in risk. And by the way, the risk for mouth cancer from cigarettes is 6 times the risk of mouth cancer in somebody who doesn't use any kind of tobacco product. The risk from chewing tobacco attributed to, you know, to mouth cancer is under 1% increase compared to people who don't smoke at all or don't use any tobacco product.
Wow, that's fascinating. And what about the FDA? Are they misleading people about smokeless tobacco or not giving all the facts? Or in your point of view, what do you think is missing here?
Well, there is a history that goes back to decades where the killer product is really cigarettes.
Yeah.
But the custom in the tobacco control community hasn't been to tell people that they shouldn't smoke. It's been a tobacco-free policy where, they say you shouldn't use any tobacco products at all. And in support of that, they've said things and required warning labels that give people the impression that the smokeless tobacco is just as dangerous as cigarettes. You're just trading a lung cancer risk for a mouth cancer risk. And that's simply not true. The cigarettes are as deadly as they claim, and cigarettes even, you know, kill bystanders from heart disease and from an increase in cancer risk. And the deaths from all these smokeless tobacco products combined are so low and so hard to tell from background that they're not tracked by any federal agency.
Wow. Yeah, interesting to watch. I mean, in this country, as you said it, it has been such a tug of war. And I do think there is a lot of misinformation out there as to what people can do. As you said, nothing's completely risk-free, but what people don't know and don't understand. And it's a shame because it would be great for more of that information to be available, don't you think?
Oh, I certainly think so. And, I'm really concerned about it. I mean, I think it's gotten to the point where, this misinformation coming from tobacco control authorities is killing people. I mean, there are a lot of people who love to quit, who tried to quit cigarettes and been unable to. And if they could just switch to snus or chewing tobacco or e-cigarettes and switch with the idea that this would be a way of transitioning, a way where they could satisfy their urge for nicotine while transitioning to total abstinence, that could save a lot of lives.
Yeah, I agree with you. Dr. Joel Nitzkin, thanks so much for joining us on America Tonight, and thanks to all of you for listening to this hour of the show.
I left a note on his dresser, and my old wedding ring with these few goodbye words.
Fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready to eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and served. Life-saving, ready to eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
North Korea openly threatens the U.S. and launches a new missile every other week. Their warhead of choice? Electromagnetic pulse. Such an event would cripple the U.S. power grid for years and leave millions in the dark. Are you ready? You can be with a Solark EMP-hardened solar generator. Solark works day in and day out to keep your essentials protected. You can have peace of mind knowing your power will be there when you most need it. Visit PortableSolarLLC.com to see EMP testing. That's PortableSolarLLC.com. Energy insurance for your family.